Hey guys, this is David Butler here with Chris and Shane from Rock Paper Podcast.
Sometimes I get a little bit distracted. More than often, things tend to slip my mind. So I guess I missed it when she said she was leaving. But you know me, I'm daydreaming all the time. Yeah. Well, she said, boy, how can you be so calm, so cool? Like you don't care about the people that surround you. Wanna survive this world, you gotta learn how to lose yourself when it's falling down around you. I'd rather do one thing great than say alright, never love it, I can learn it, I can burn it. So my mind's gonna take a quick trip behind a blank stare and find some visions locked on this passion of mine. I don't know if it's wrong or right, but I'm not saying sorry, so read between the lines. I know you took back soon, all about me. If we ever meet again, I'll still be working it out. One love at a time. Oh, at a time. See, lately I'm having trouble being careful. Recently I've taken way too many risks. Chose keys and strings over second things, cause I know I can't stand a minute without melody in it. And I'm singing just like this. I'd rather do one thing great than say alright, never love it, I can learn it, I can burn it. My mind's gonna take a quick trip behind a blank stare and find some of your visual visions on this life. I'm just passing mine. I don't know if it's wrong or right, but I'm not saying sorry, so we'll read between the lines. I don't need to sit back soon. If we ever meet again, I'll still be working it out. One at a time.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 36. My name is Chris Bumeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
So we're going to do a giveaway. I think we did a giveaway before a while back with like a sticker, right? Or something. What did we give away?
No, we went, we had Garcia on. We did
Core Complex passes. Okay. So we had Clockwork on the show. Was it last week? Yeah, because they had their CD release for the CD Not Meant for the Dark. So, we have a copy that we would like to give away to one lucky human being or alien, if they're listening on other environments. So, we thought it'd be fun to use Twitter to give this away. And all you have to do is just listen to this episode and tweet to us with hashtag Clockwork. And who the first person to do that will get a copy of Clockwork's new album, Not Meant for the Dark. It's awesome. It's rocking. Shane saw him live last weekend, and sounds like he put on an awesome show.
Yeah, fantastic show. Great group of guys. And
great goober guys.
Yeah.
Great goober guys. So on Twitter, tweet us at Rock Paper Podcast and hashtag Clockwork, and the first person to do that will win this album, and we'll get your information and stalk you afterwards and keep the album. Sorry guys, it's just what we do. Guest this week is David Butler, who I've known since high school, and I'm going to bring up because I don't know if you remember having gym class together. Do you remember gym class?
Yeah, I do. Wow.
Do you remember, and I can't remember who the other guy was, and we had an inside joke about the wall.
Oh my
do you remember
gosh.
That?
Wow,
I have no idea what it. Memory. I have no idea what it was in reference to.
Is it David Hovnessian?
No, I don't think it was. I can't remember. He had like really blonde hair. I saw him at like Stephanie's a while back.
Andrew Mertz.
No, but he was in that class too. It's gonna drive me nuts, so I feel bad. But anyway, I remember
your list off. Everyone
yeah, right.
If you, class from 12 years ago.
If you had a yearbook,
yeah,
be,
let me go get the yearbook.
Yeah, but I remember we would sit in class or in gym class, and yeah. for some reason we'd always talk about that. We just add on to this the wall, and I have no idea what it was in reference to. But
that's
how our relationship started, was in gym class and with the wall. So that's a fun little story. But so I don't know if you were you into music in high school?
Yeah, so...
Because I'm trying to remember... So, first off, you have an album, Arrivals and Departure, which came out last year. I knew through my brother that you were into music, but I didn't know if you... I didn't know if I knew it during high school, like, when I was actually there, because I was a couple years older than you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I bounced around from click to click, as sometimes we do in high school. And I was about 16 when I picked up a guitar and was like, you know what? I like singing. Let's do this. And almost immediately, after I got comfortable with the guitar and taught myself how to play and started writing a few, you know, really emo high school songs that,
right.
that you write about being grounded or whatever you write about when you're 16.
Yeah.
I was good friends with Brandon Bumeter, your little brother, and this is full circle here. He had Acid Pro on his computer.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd go to your house. And he would record me to the best of our knowledge. We obviously,
yeah.
As an engineer now, I know that we didn't know what we were doing with the software, but it worked. And so we had this little computer mic. It was like the kind you speak into.
Was it the long white light?
Yeah,
stick?
Like in,
oh, yeah.
in like the 90s when you're trying to play, you know, Age of Empires, Unreal or something online.
Yeah.
And I would sing and play into that, and he would record me and then burn a CD, and
that's hilarious.
That was making it then.
See, I think, because I remember him sending something, or maybe, I don't remember how I heard it, but it sounded amazing, and I was like, holy crap, I didn't even know you played guitar or anything, but yeah, maybe I was up at college whenever you were over at my house, because I don't remember if I remember seeing you at our house.
You could blackmail me with that, because I'm pretty sure he still has those.
I bet he's got a lot. Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff, but that's hilarious, because I just remember my brother sending me or posting or something. I was like, holy cow, yeah, David Butler, that's amazing. So you said you taught yourself guitar?
Yes.
That's
I was about 16.
And you also play, like, is it piano and like,
yeah,
you got a couple instruments. You
taught myself piano when I was in the desert in 2010. It was in the wake of... serious breakup. Most of the songs on my record are about, and then I got deployed right after it, so my whole life was like, you know,
yeah,
which is great for songwriting when your life's in shambles. And so I, you know, I heard a song by one of my favorite artists now, Brooke Frazier, and she played called Scarlet. She was playing the piano, and I was like, oh man, I've got to learn how to do that. That's just when something impresses me like immensely, I've I'm obsessed with being able to reproduce it. So I bought this little $100 Casio keyboard. I was living in England at the time. And I took it with me to the desert, down to a country called Qatar. And then I was eventually forwarded to Oman, which at the time was a PR blackout. I didn't know I was there, but I had this keyboard with me, with my duffel bag, my gear, and everything like that, and this keyboard, this little $100 Casio, and eventually had that guitar actually shipped out to me. And I would, in my spare time after I'd clock off, I'd go in whatever little trailer I had, and I would just practice. I had nothing better to do.
Right, yeah. Jeez, well, yeah, because I saw that... You know, like I said, I knew you played guitar after, you know, my brother kind of showed me stuff, but then as I was kind of looking into it, I didn't realize you played, you know, a couple of instruments. And the fact that you taught yourself drives me nuts, because that's amazing. And I've tried to teach myself. What drives me nuts is I taught my brother how to kind of play guitar, basically, and then, like, a week later, he was 100 times better than I was, because
Brandon's always been that guy.
Yeah, so, but, like, I was always impressed, too, with, like, piano, and just anytime you can add piano to a song or something, it's incredible. And just piano, you know, music with piano is just awesome. So, be able to teach yourself, that's impressive, just because it's not something you can just be like, well, let me just,
you know,
play around here. You know, I think there's coordination and stuff, but...
And you're right. I don't want to take away from it or diminish it at all, you know, because it was hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
I had, like, my parents tried to give me lessons when I was a young kid, and for a little while, and then I quit, and then I forgot everything, so... But that must have generated in me some sort of aptitude for it.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you asked me, I would tell you that learning guitar and piano is easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's the easiest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
But now I'm trying to learn violin, and it's the hardest thing I've ever touched.
That's the next instrument that when you add it to a song, it sounds incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's just the closest thing to a voice, all the nuances, little thing. But
yeah,
there's a cost to that. You know, it's what's harder is more rewarding. What's easy is costly.
Right.
The violin I've been playing for almost 2 years now, and it is still... if it weren't so expensive an instrument, I'd throw it against the wall. it's just so frustrating. I can barely.
How do you go about teaching yourself? Like, because I know guitar, you can all look up tabs. Piano, I think even there's stuff like that. But I didn't know with violin, is there a
violin? I actually started teaching myself. Made zero progress. It's like, it's like this with the guitar, piano. You know, within days, I can have anyone musical or not playing enough chords, a progression that. Where they can start mimicking and recreating their own favorite songs. And immediately they're encouraged, you know?
Yeah.
Not the formal way where you learn how to read music and this long drudgery and stuff like that, but something excites you. With the violin, unfortunately, there is no bottom tier that's reachable.
Yeah.
You know? You are either really good at it or you're awful.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground. You either have to play it really well to play anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk into a keyboard and you take for granted that... There's my note.
Yeah.
There's so much involved with a single note in a violin.
I'll say, if you play a sour thing on a violin, it's like that screeching noise. Oh, yeah. You're just like, oh, gosh. Or you're right. Like a piano, you can maybe, you know, it's still a note. And guitar even, you know, you can have those kind of off sounds with a guitar. Mm-hmm. But violin's like that distinct, like, oh, my God, like a nails on a chalkboard type thing. When it's not played right, but when somebody can play it who knows how to, it sounds amazing. And it just adds
I did sign up for lessons at Webster, and I was taking them, but I hate to say it, but it's just to no avail.
I did that at piano, too.
It's an instrument. I'm just not good at taking private lessons, but it's an instrument I find you can't really teach.
Mm-hmm.
You can help people with little things here and there, but 99% of it's muscle memory and just repetition.
Yeah.
Spending hours and hours and hours trying to get... Your position perfect, and it's time I haven't put into it yet.
But just to be able to have kind of I think the biggest thing is the patience to know that this isn't something that you can just necessarily pick up and play well, you know. And I think that makes it that much more rewarding to
you're absolutely right
to build towards it, you know.
Absolutely right.
That's awesome.
So what you mentioned a little bit about the desert, but what pushed you into joining the forces and.
Oh, well, let's see, 2006, 1157 didn't work out, so...
Oh, my God, 1157! Yeah. Oh, another band that... Yeah.
I just a little context, I was in a band with Chris's little brother, Brandon, one who was talking about... It was the kind of days where you just wanted to be in a band.
Yeah.
And it was Tim Bouillon, Chris Bouillon, Nick...
Blackburn,
thank you. And myself as a singer. So imagine, if you will, and you may get a chance to listen to my music and laugh about it, a pop singer as Justin Timberlake with a little country twang as it gets on a heavy metal setting, all instrumentation. And they were like, let's make this work. We like your voice. And I was like, I'm in there like swimwear. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And it was, not that you can't merge those genres well. I've heard it done. But... We definitely did not do that. We went to Midwest Music Pit a few times and just, you know, did the high school thing.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I was in a band with Tim and TJ and them in high school, and you go back and listen. And it's not that you say, like, God, we were absolutely horrible, but you're just like, you realize as you grow and you're like, you know, you're just stoked to be in a band and, you know, everybody thought they were going to be, you know, or had the opportunity to get big and whatever, you know. It's just part of the high school mentality. I think it was fun, you know.
It's something to be said for the fans in high school, though. So many people came out to see us and didn't care how junky we sounded, but they were just like, I'm with the band.
It made us feel even more cooler, too, because, like, I remember, playing with Tears for Tomorrow at the Pit when it was right here in, you know, Wentzville, and, having like 70 to 100 people show up, and we just thought we were the freaking big man on campus. And now I go back and listen, and I had big baggy clothes on. And
I was telling, I think it was Shane or you earlier, about that genre in general, the whole alternative rock genre, Benjamin Mudvayne, Stained, all of something like 2004, 2006, that genre seemed to peak as far as mainstream popularity goes. Obviously, they're still around elsewhere, but I remember just turning on the radio, 105.7 point was always the station people turned to in those in those years, and now they still play songs on 105.7 from that era, because it's just, it was like bands were all the rage. Somewhere along the way, it became back about solo artists. So when that was, but
yeah, I don't know if it was because and I remember ending in high school and then into college, like buying tons of CDs and just really being into music and following all these different bands that weren't necessarily mainstream. They kind of grabbed especially like the screamo bands like Under Oath and stuff, who got big and stuff like that. But it's funny now, and Shane's the exception because Shane listens to. I mean, he music is his passion, and you may be the same way, but I definitely don't follow music as closely as I used to in college. I don't know if it's just change of priorities or what it is, where different things come up. I still love music, and
there's different avenues of, I guess you could say, music appreciation. Like mine specifically is creation and recreation. I love to make music. I love to share music. Shane's is he's in love with the scene. He's in love with the whole
like experience of
the ambience, the experience. You go, you meet the band, you support the band. It's a love of music, and there's just different angles to love it, and you got yours too.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we all have our purpose, I guess. Where we fit in, and but there's got to be people like myself, and there's a lot of us, which is kind of fun. Like a lot of the people that I am friendly now with are people that I've met from going to all these shows, and you see the same couple people at some of the shows, and you all become friends because you're seeing them more than you are your other friends. And there's got to be the fans that out there supporting it, the people like yourself that are making the music.
It's really complimentary. You can't have one without the other,
right?
Yeah. You can't have bands perform like they love to without people that love to come and support and promote them.
Yeah, see, I can't play at all, so I take a lot of appreciation for people that can, and like, and that's why.
And I can't sell at all. I'm at the bar.
Well, let's talk about Arrivals and Departures, because so that was you made that, was it after you kind of did you're stint with the military, or was it in the process? I guess you said you were playing and teaching yourself.
Yeah, I wrote there, but as soon as I was able to play piano, I wrote my first song for the record in 2010, called Hearsay. And then immediately after, like a week later, I wrote Tunnel Vision, which is another track from the record. Mm-hmm. So I was banging them out. I was, I was in a time when I was just songwriting. I was really inspired. It's inspiration is an interesting thing. I have found that it is a hard thing to conjure. Mm-hmm. You can't just, all right, I'm gonna turn my inspiration on now. It's like your life is like a food. What you take in, the people you know, you meet, the experiences you have, there's an overflow of all your experiences into at certain moments of your life where you just. I remember a time when I could sit down and crank out a song like that in an hour, and then another one, and then another one. Like I did that once on my YouTube channel. Like someone had just commented on my page and said, "Hey, write a song based on some quote I said in my status," and I literally cranked one out in an hour, and it's still up there. I think it's called "Nice Guys Finish Last." On purpose is what it's called. Purpose. But I could do that. But now, since I finished this record, and my whole mindset's transitioned from writing into developing my skill set. I've tried to sit down and write, and I just I cannot. At least I have a standard now that I just
write.
I'll end up with a waste basket full of crumpled pieces of paper because I'm just like no, nothing's good enough anymore. So
what part of like because now you're going to school who are for like a music production. So what was it that kind of I guess transitioned to where you started listening more as a producer or, engineer compared to a writer, was there something, an aspect of the art that you learned, or was it just gradual,
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that question. the process itself did that. Mm. And so after I got deployed, I saved a lot of money. It's tax-free. It's really great. You know, I was really fortunate to have been deployed. I know that's not a perspective a lot of people would guess, but I consider it really blessed to have been in the military for what it did for me. Mm. Not so much my selfless service, but, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I had a lot of money from it. It was well compensated. And so I took that money and I poured it into the production of this record. I purposely got stationed in Oklahoma. I put it on the top of my list and got it. And I hated my career at the time, my career field. Not the Air Force, but my job within it, mm-hmm. emergency management. Hated it. That's another story. but every weekend I would drive 2 hours to Oklahoma City from where I was. And met up with a guy there that helped produce me. I didn't know anything about engineering, mm-hmm. but I wanted complete creative control. I wanted to do this, that, and the other, and I just so frustrated. It was really a year and a half long process from mid 2011 to 2013 when I moved, got separated, got out, and released the record of making this. And I would, because I never had enough time. The drive took a toll on me. Every single weekend, I'd have to, you know, drive out there, sleep on his couch for days at a time, and then I'd have to try to get into his mind what I wanted him to do, just in order to, you know, keep him invested. I had to keep paying and paying and paying, and he's a phenomenal guy. Mm-hmm. The guy I met him through was the first guy I hired, and he's a I don't want to sound too cynical, but we didn't agree on a lot, and we ended up having to go our separate ways.
Yeah,
things didn't work out. But through him, I met Wen Vu, the guy who engineered this record and co-produced it with me. And he's just a phenomenal, talented guy with a hip hop, mainstream pop background. He's all about what, you know, what's popular, yeah. And still what's good. And I was this indie sounding kind of guy, and we merged and. Mm-hmm. It was, but anyway, I remember promising myself over and over and over again. I was like, next time I do this, I'm doing it myself. I'm learning how to do it when does, so I can be completely DIY. And I've always had that as kind of my personality. It's why I'm into mechanics, is I want to do it myself, because it's cheaper by a long shot, and I can do it on my own time. And most importantly, I think, is it gives me the tools to do things creatively that I otherwise wouldn't be able to express. Like, it's one thing to tell your engineer, I have the sound in my head, it kind of sounds like this, can you make it happen? And they try, and you go, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
But when you can put your own fingers on it, and you know certain, you know, ways to manipulate plugins and synths and pads and ways to EQ your recording stuff, you can really make it do things that you wouldn't have guessed you were able to do. So it kind of, you know, so doing it myself, being a DIY guy, was what had me go to school to learn how to engineer. So I plan on having my own personal studio with which I probably most likely freelance record everybody else as well as myself.
Yeah. Well, I think too, there's something almost like, there's a lot of pressure on creating your own, you know, whether it's content, whether it's film, music, whatever, but I think there's almost more of a satisfaction in a sense to be able to help somebody deliver what they want, and like, you know, an engineer or producer who comes in and can kind of take somebody's you know, song or whatever, and not necessarily say, okay, well, that sounds good, this is how it's going to be, but say, okay, here are some things that you could do to help with that. And I couldn't imagine too, what you said, traveling on the weekends to go record, like, that's got to be incredibly, not necessarily frustrating, but think that, okay, you have 2 days that you have to rely on getting this stuff done. You know, it's not like, okay, well, I'm going to go record nonstop for 2 months, and you kind of have a little...
You nailed it, man.
You know, I couldn't imagine, because it's almost like, okay, I'm going to write a song, and sitting down and saying, I'm writing a song, and it just doesn't happen like that. You can't just turn creativity on, you know, and I can't imagine how...
Man, it was... it should not have taken a year and a half. It just shouldn't. Between Wen and I, we should have had that done in a month or two. Mm-hmm. But there's something to be said for the stress, though. Mm-hmm. You know, it really aged me a lot, but at the same time, you hear that year and a half in that album. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean the hours we spent recording and touching it, but the space in between my visits to the studio, it kind of made time for ideas and critique. And by the time the first song was done and I was on the sixth song, it had been like 4 or 5 months, and I had heard the first song enough times to critique it.
Yeah.
It was between having the first song recorded and the last one, there was so much time that I was like a totally different artist. And yeah. I was like, man, I wanted to go back. And there is a journey here on this album that is not just years worth of writing, but years worth of actual production and thought. Mm-hmm. and actually really a lot of stress.
Yeah.
So it's
I could imagine it's something you're basically pouring your heart into. Mm-hmm. and it's like with any other entertainment medium, you're saying, okay, this is a part of me, here's other people that get to go judge it, and like that's got to be stressful. It's just like any type of product you create, but like,
and that, this being my first record, I made the rookie mistake of overhyping it. Every time I thought the deadline was in sight, I made a big deal about it. Facebook was like, guys, this is coming. It's coming. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then finally I dropped it, and everyone's like, for real? It's actually here now? I was like, yeah.
But yeah, I think that's all. I mean, I think there's things that, especially recording your first album, that you learn that going into, if you plan to record another one, that you're going to be 10 times more knowledgeable, especially, I mean, obviously in the front of, you know how to do things now compared to just going in and having an engineer do it.
The learning curve is also something you hear over that year and a half. You know, like there's some songs that are kind of bare instrumental, and then there's some that are just like massively produced. You're like, what happened? Are these two different artists? But it's I learned so much. I still am learning it every day. I supplement my engineering courses with music theory courses, instrumentalia. Mm-hmm. I am honing my craft, like with it's what I've been doing for years since the last album. Mm-hmm. I tried to spend the first one marketing, and we can talk about that. It's a sadder story. But when I decided, you know, I need to figure out what I'm going to do here. School became an option because obviously I have the post 9/11 GI Bill from the military. Again, just mm-hmm. still paying it forward from that decision. So my school's paid for. And the VA, you know, makes it so that I can have my bills paid and go to school. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Go to school for something that's going to make this sound better. Invest in my thing. Not die off.
Yeah.
But actually make it so that my next record is going to be 10 times this record. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, the attitude you have to go in thinking. And I really thought this is a great first record. Mm-hmm. I forget that sometimes I'll listen to it and I'll just think, I don't know how I pulled this off. it really came together as a first record. I really love it as a first record. My second one, I'm hoping is just going to totally set a new bar. Mm. And because I've spent years and years and years, that was a bit of an exaggeration. About I've spent a few years now.
40 to 50 years.
It feels like it. But I've spent a few years now just really. And I am counting the years that I had the songs written and was just trying to record them.
Yeah.
The whole time I was recording, I was just trying, I was still learning. Mm. So I've spent a lot of time really changing my taste, my sound, and every aspect of the production.
Right.
So that I can.
Do you find, just out of curiosity, a lot of people who go into, maybe that you've met through school that are going to like production or engineering, were they former musicians? Because it seems like that's almost like, you almost have to know it now as a musician, because the music industry itself is in such like a crippled state in terms of commercial, and so like knowing how to create your own things, the ability is like, we can record this podcast on a computer and a mic. We have two components that we need and then just us. Obviously there's more with music, but it's such an accessible art, obviously knowing what you're doing is a huge and time consuming thing, but does it seem like a lot of people that are going into engineering were previous musicians or just people who enjoy
most of them actually? You get your odd outs that are just tech heads that are there for Foley, sound effects on video games and film and stuff like that, and maybe just running cable at the Edward Jones Dome or what have you.
Yeah.
But most of the guys are people like me in some respect who had a band or in a band or just love music and can't play an instrument, but they're really good technically. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, hey, how do I fit into this thing? I want to be part of the band, if you will.
Yeah.
But I need a role here, and then they find that they can do this. So it's their. But there's this thing that happens to them all. You get there, and all the professors and all the reality hits, and they all tell you this thing. They say off the bat, you know, 1% of all you audio engineers will actually be sitting in the studio touching faders on a console recording music like you came here to do. Yeah. The rest of you will be doing live sound at the concerts. You'll be doing, like I said, commercials, this, that, recording voiceovers for things.
Yeah.
You won't actually be the music making guy. That you
right. And
obviously that didn't discourage me. I was just like, okay. Because
yeah.
I'm a DIY guy. Mm-hmm. I don't plan on needing to be hired by Capitol or anything like that.
Right, yeah.
I just, you know.
Well, we talked to Fivefold a while back, and they had, you know, they raved about working with their producer, Matt Amelong, and that's, he's, I think, I don't really know him personally, but I think he used to play, and like, but he's able to get in there and show them, you know, like what he thinks would work, and then and how like how that's such a huge impact on them, being that he can play and has a vision for as the engineering and the producing part of it. And so like, you know, so I feel like you're right there with that, where, you know, you've already talked about being able to play guitar and playing piano and now violin. And
yeah, it's definitely complimentary, because you have this art and I need to share it. If you love it, that's what you want to yeah. do. And the bridge to that is audio engineering.
Right.
And you can sound really good live and not get that across to people if you don't know how to engineer or can't afford to.
Yeah.
And obviously, since I'm going to not have to pay $60, $90 an hour, because I like to spend years at a time in the studio really, really, really making it what I want, I have to do it this way. Yeah. It's out of necessity and preference.
So has it felt like, and maybe you answered, does it feel like your shift of priorities in terms of being a musician has kind of maybe filtered now towards more being an engineer? Like, is that something, if you had a goal, say, I mean, obviously I think everybody would love to be the musician, but
right.
have you kind of now learning, being able to kind of mind yourself yeah. the craft, do you feel more experienced in that sense compared to a musician?
That's a good question. I like
or
that.
Still undecided, you know?
No, it's a good question. It's good to think through, just for my sake, you know. But yeah, I have definitely given it some thought. I definitely have less of a direction than I used to. Mm-hmm. When making Arrivals and Departures, I had in mind, while making it, and this is just, you know, me being naive, but while making it, I sincerely had this faith. I was like, if the right people hear this, this could be something. Because I yeah. believed in it like that. And people were telling me, you know, this is something.
Mm-hmm.
People I didn't know, you know, and sure enough, I actually got it in the hands through Matt Menard, engineer buddy of mine that I used to live next to in Wentzville, who's in New York right now, engineering for. He had a contact from Sony, one of the producers from Sony there, who he had listened to my record, Rattles and Parchers.
Mm.
He called me and he said, they want you to fly out here and we'll record you. And I was like, for real? Sony? And he's like, they really want to do this. And I said, well, what do you think of the record? And he said, well, here's the thing. They think it's raw talent. They haven't heard a whole lot like this. They think it's really good. But he doesn't believe you can do it again. He says, in his experience, they do this one time, that's it. And I was like, I just about threw the phone. I was like, I can do this in my sleep.
Yeah.
Tell him. I was so excited. And they ended up working it out with a guy that, I guess they said, if you can fly yourself down here, you know, we'll record you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I had no money. I was wrenching at Valvoline to get by, trying to sell the record, tour yeah. the Walking Calamity Band, anything I could get my hands on at the time. It was a real weird period yeah. just 2 years ago. And I was like, man, I can't afford to go out there right now. He's like, oh, maybe next year. I was like, oh, man. But, you know, that's probably for the better, because my philosophy is evolving along with my priorities. And so it looks like this now. Mm-hmm. Basically, I don't have a need or even really a desire to be mainstream like I did with this first record.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to some shows since then that really have, like, affected me. Like, William Fitzsimmons is probably one of my top three favorite artists of all time. Saw Ruth Moody, saw a lot of people, and I thought, you know what? just looking around me in small venues, just thinking, in my opinion, these are the greatest artists, songwriters that are alive today. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a stadium.
Right.
Why do I need to be famous or successful by... why do I want quantity fans when I can have quality fans? Everybody in this room is dead silent, just hanging on every word, every lyric, and they know each one. Why do I need to trade that for the come and go fans that are there, right there with you for the song, and then
they
I was like, I don't want that. I want this. I want the guy. I want the fact that he just showed up in a van with his band, and he's published, and he can write, and he, you know, he's got his family, and I want that. Mm-hmm. I don't want the A celebrity stuff at all, and not just so that, along with me just getting better at certain instruments and stuff like that. I think you can expect from this next record, whenever it will be. I'm not gonna start putting deadlines on it.
March 31st. No, I'm just joking.
It'll be a while because I may graduate before I put it out. You can expect from this next record maybe more of an indie folk side to it. But again, I have this eclectic kind of thing I do. You may have realized from the first album, though there was a common stream, there was several different styles, and you may just find that in general on the new record. So I have this plan where it's called Get a Job. And when I get out of school, whatever that may look like, hopefully it's going to be something in engineering.
Right.
And that'll definitely complement, or freelance recording, so it'll definitely complement what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it's a 9-to-5. It pays my bills, so I don't have to rely on pushing records to survive. So I don't have to have that stress. So I can really not sell out and write for relevance sake. I can write honestly, like I mean to, like I did when I was in the desert. So I can keep doing this. And I think it's wise to have a steady income, come home at 5, write, record my own stuff and release it, and do the weekend gig thing. Maybe take some vacation days if I need to tour, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Right.
I will always be doing music. Mm-hmm. I'll always be pushing records out, music out, other people's. Mm-hmm. The only difference now between what it is now and what it is then, besides the music style, is whether or not I'll be relying on that or calling it my career.
Right.
You'll always be able to hear me. That's just the nature of the industry now in distribution mediums. You'll always be able to find new music from David Butler. Mm-hmm. And if you're in St. Louis, you'll always be able to hear me play. It's nothing has changed in regards to, I'm not some artist who just decided not to do music anymore. But you just won't hear me talk about being a full-time artist that's trying to make it big.
Yeah.
But you won't get anything less from me.
Right, the passion's still there.
In fact, you'll get more because I don't have to worry at the same time about trying to make it pay the bills.
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it on the head. Is you kind of have to, I mean, there's not really big money to be made in the music industry as an artist unless you hit huge. Right. And that's like the, diamond in the rough type person that's makes extreme amounts of money, where engineering you can make a living off of, and like you said, it's something you're still involving yourself in, mm-hmm. some kind of creative outlet while being able to pursue your actual creative passion, and you have to at some point think realistically and say, well, I do have to pay bills, it's not just sitting there, I have to have a job. And
the other avenue is I've always had a passion for film score. If I get a chance to compose like Hans Zimmer for a film, I'd do that. I'd take it for sure. That's a long shot.
That'd be. Have you ever looked into how that's like done? Just in terms.
Oh,
of...
Oh yeah, yeah, I have.
That's gonna be incredible.
On my Facebook, just yesterday, I uploaded a video clip. So what they did, and you can check this out on my Facebook, or maybe if you. I uploaded it on a link to my YouTube. If you go to YouTube, there's a few David Butlers on YouTube, but Arrivals and Departures will lead you straight there to my channel. And the most recently uploaded video is this is what it was. This video called Vertus Verti. This guy named Laszlo, this well-known effects producer and composer, created this video. He's also a professor at the School for Visual Arts. Mm-hmm. It's this robot, the short animation film. It's like 3-4 minutes. And he created the sound for it and everything. And then he took the sound out of it, left just the video, the credits, all that. It's just the video, and put it out and said, as a competition, said, "You guys make your own sound. All the sound effects, all the Foley, all the composition, you know, the rocks, the water, you know, water wearing, glass breaking, whatever, yeah. Everything from the little short film. And it got given to me as an assignment at Webster. I just finished it a few days ago. And you can go to that and hear not just the work I did with sound effects, but my composition that I put in there. And you can have an example of kind of what I've been doing engineering. That the thing that you got to watch out for, and this is my disclaimer, is as a rule, they said, don't import, and this is in the description of the video, if you go check it out on YouTube, as a rule, they said, don't import any pre-made sound effects. No recorded, record water breaking, don't download anything, don't grab it off the internet. Make it all in a sequencer, like virtual instruments, like synths and pads. That sounds nearly impossible, trying to get like stuff like knocking and everything like that. Like, but I made it happen. I spent 30 hours on just trying to make it. It's not great sound quality because of that rule.
Yeah.
But I think you'll appreciate it.
So you can't just sit there with an iPad, just, you know, beep, boop, beep, boop.
Yeah.
I couldn't record. Google search. I couldn't record anything for it. I had to create it in using MIDI instruments and stuff like that. So it was, I think it turned out well for the restraints.
Yeah. Well, it probably opened your mind up to a whole, I mean, it forced you to probably process a whole new creative way to make something happen instead of just, okay, they're footsteps, grab shoes and record it, you know, because it's...
I meant to ask you, recently, you might have heard this, Taylor Swift had this little bout with Spotify where she was like, hey, I'm withdrawing all my records from Spotify.
There's a bunch of them.
And and you know what, where they're doing that is because, you know, these artists are like, you know, artists need to get paid. Spotify puts their music out there for free, essentially. Songwriters don't get paid when our music's out there for free, and it's hurting, you know, the industry. Now she has nothing to worry about. She's the level of iconic where you get paid for things that have nothing to do with your music, let alone your music. And, but she's making, it's actually a very respectful thing she's doing, because there are a lot of musicians out there like myself where my stuff is available on Spotify for free. But if I relied on that to get by and people could just go get it for free, what would that do to me, you know? You know, people got to eat even. So, like I said, to say, it's nice given the way the world and the industry is now, where you can just get anyone's record for free. And if he's not for free, then I don't want it.
Consumer side, yeah.
To not depend on it, once again, for your income. So now I can go and I can put it on YouTube, Spotify, and all these free things and be like, hey, if you buy it, you buy it. If not, have it for free. And yeah, I can do this thing where I can push my record for free so I can get just my name out there and not so much try to live off of it. And it's just so...
Real quick, because I'm a huge whore for Spotify, and every episode we talk about it, I'm just curious. You know, and I totally get the justification for musicians who choose not to use it, because there's not a lot of money that they get paid. But how does that go into... How do you put something on Spotify, just from like a basic symbol? Is there like a... thing, or I'm just curious.
There's probably individual registration where you go and you have an account, and it's an artist account, not just a listener account, and you upload your music and so on and so forth.
Gotcha.
What I did is I took my label. I have my own publishing company, by the way. I got advised by somebody from Sony a while back, different person from Sony that I had a connection to, who's in publishing, and they advised me, don't sign with an indie label. They're going to take all your money for signing a record because, you know, you get 100% mechanical royalties for songwriting, but that's not where the money's made. The money's made in the publishing royalties, and they own that. They distribute your music. So make your own publishing company so that when you sell your record, you get all the money.
Yeah.
Obviously, I did that, and I have my own publishing company affiliated with BMI and everything, but it's the kind of thing you do for a really serious, continuous selling artist or band.
Yeah.
So I just have this company here that's like inactive. I pay taxes on it. It's like weird.
Yeah.
And then all I really needed to do, and they offer this now, is go through a distribution label. Mm. I did that as well. I went through Mondo Tunes as my distribution label. What they do, it's like they you give them your CD, they disperse it for free. It's really great. You just pay them a one-time fee to iTunes, Amazon.
Basically host
every single, including Spotify, every single outlet where people can go get music, they put it out there for a price. If it's MP4, like iTunes, my album's at $10. If it's MP3, it's like $9.
Yeah.
But MP3's a little tip. MP3 is a lossy format. It's less quality.
Yeah.
It'll get you music in MP3 form. Get it in AAC at iTunes.
Good little tip.
Yeah.
Also,
most people can't tell it's psychoacoustic modeling, but
yeah.
I think the MP3 got popular, being that the fact that you could put you still got a fair quality, but you could fit more on an iPod or whatever.
And that's still why the MP3 is popular. Actually, it's because we're in the world of smartphones, and you got hard drive disk space,
right. Yeah.
And the MP3, that's what it does. It's data compression.
Yeah.
It makes it such a small file format that you can have like endless music. And the reason that people aren't and we had the technology to make more hard drive space, to have bigger files, which equals more quality files. It's just that people don't care. This is what happened to our generation in the last 30 years as far as audio files go and hi-fi music is. People are happy to say that sounds great, but they don't care. They're really crunched, compressed music is what this generation grew up on and is used to now, and they're happy and content with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I could compare it to, you know, I'm happy to say that a T-bone steak from Red Lobster is better than cheeseburger from McDonald's. But it doesn't mean that I can't, you know, spend less money or I just don't care about the quality difference.
Right.
I think it will make us come back. I'm making a prediction. I think that audio quality will make its comeback, and it won't be because people demand it necessarily just out of some sort of connoisseurism or respect or taste. It'll be because the technology just gets so advanced that they say, hey, why not start throwing WAV files in here? Why not? We have the space.
Yeah.
And then people will start to notice and learn the difference. And then once you do, you can't go back to MP3.
Yeah.
Like, you just, you know, it's subtle, but it's...
I'm sure it's, like, the same thing, like TV, watching in HD compared to standard definition.
That.
You know,
it's Blu-ray it's exactly that. It's sampling rate's what it is. You know, TV's 48,000samples per second, and CD quality's 44,100.
Yeah.
Like, 16-bit. And it just keeps getting, you know, crunched and lower and less quality. Like if you have a picture of the sound file, the more samples it takes, the more of the actual representation of what was recorded live it is.
Mm.
But when you condense that, less space, it takes fewer, more spread apart samples.
Yeah.
So you don't hear the loss,
right?
Because you're not used to it. But
well, I mean, it's the same thing. You get in the argument everybody about, like, there's all those people that swear by vinyl and how much how pure the sound is and everything, and they you know, that they don't, but then, like, so there's that market, and a lot of the people that he talked about earlier in those small theaters, these singer songwriters and these people doing it, those are the ones that are the big vinyl push and for that sound quality, because they appreciate it and they want to keep this alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the you know, your mainstream pop on the radio. Those are the, they're trying to mass produce and trying to sell as much as they can. Nobody's really caring about you know, hey, that's, you know, there's some detail there that, you know, it's
well, people, I think they, if they A beat it next to back to back, they would tell the difference.
Yeah.
There's data compression, and then there's music compression, and what you're losing when you go from vinyl to CD to it with actual recording, you know, digitally versus analog, is you're losing dynamic range. Like, there is enough headroom, is what they call it, to where you can have really quiet kind of, you know, like imagine a symphony, and then all of a sudden it gets really loud and just, you know, like high frequencies and just a huge dynamic range. It's like sitting in your car. Have you ever sat in your car and you've turned it down on some parts and then turned it up at more exciting parts? What you're doing is you're simulating compression, because what these the pop artists do, plus there's radio people, they master it before they put it out, is they take the dynamic range, all this, which is a lot of the emotion, and they squeeze it, they crunch it, so it stays in here.
Right.
And that's why you're sitting there just kind of wanting more emotion out of it. And so vinyl has that. There's just no limit. You know, they've got all the dynamic range you need, and it's just, you know, it's an art. Again, it's a taste that people are happy to say is better, but they don't care.
Yeah.
they may go back to caring. I think vinyl will have its comeback.
I mean, it's that's what I was saying. Like, there's a huge, more independent I don't know. Whatever. There's a huge scene coming up. Like, there's a lot of people out there doing it right now that, you know, they maybe not be household names, but they're selling out theaters and clubs all around the country, and they put all their stuff on vinyl. They still use the iTunes and the CDs, but they're all pushing vinyl too because they want to keep it alive themselves, being fans. But you know, that's what I'm saying. They appreciate it, and hopefully they're passing it on to a new generation coming up, and it's only going to get better. But
what do you think, just coming from the engineering side, and maybe you may not have an opinion, but like CDs. I mean, I think we've talked about this before on an episode where CD, and you know, cars still have CD players. But do you think the CD format is going to ever kind of just cease to exist and go mostly digital? Or
you know, I've written some papers on this. It's there's conflicting data and some conflicting opinions. Here's mine. The CD, like we just explained, is the next tier up from digital file format, like MP3, MP4. It's got 44.1000 16-bit sampling rate. It sounds better. It's basically on CDs like listening to a WAV file. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't listen to WAV files on our smartphones and our iTunes or iPods. Those are MP4s. They're a little bit more crunched. MP4s not nearly as much as MP3s, but CD's a better quality. It just is, and you can hear that if you're an audiophile, and it does make a difference to you, but no more than the difference it makes between the CD and the next tier up, vinyl. So I think for the people who are audiophiles, which is a small amount of people,
right,
they'll still want their CDs. But let's be honest, you know, there's business, there's industry. They care about numbers. They care about quantity more than quality.
Right.
And so you'll see the CD dropping away as these smartphones just get packed with digital files.
Yeah.
To the point where the only people buying CDs are people that want it for nostalgic reasons or for audio file quality reasons, not because it's just something that you...
It's not how they're going
to
catch
it. It'll become like vinyl in that, like, people will walk up to be like, oh, you have a CD player?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cars that are being made now, you just USB it. It's just...
Right, it's all, yeah.
It is
going. Bluetooth.
It's a digital age. You just got it. People don't know what they're losing. That's why it's happening.
Yeah.
What is that, Sony Walkman?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what, I mean, it kind of seems like it's, in a sense, Apple's fault because when they released the iPod, I mean, it all became of how many songs can I pack onto this?
Well, you can go from having a binder full of CDs in your car, and even that, you only, whatever, got a couple hundred songs or whatever, compared to... In your pocket, you can put 30,000 songs, and you can, and it runs for days.
Or now, you know, Spotify, like we talked about. I mean, you have like a whole iTunes store on your thing, and it's for $10 a month. You know, but again, if you don't notice the quality, you're not feel like you're missing out on much. But like you said, if you know the difference, then you know, there's those who are feeling that they're going to be kind of gypped out of. You know, you don't want to buy a. It'd be the same thing as like if my wife's like, should we buy a DVD or Blu-ray? I'm like, first you buy Blu-ray DVD combo because you're going to get the whatever. But yeah, I'm not going to downgrade because I know there's something better in FX.
Yeah.
But I haven't hit that with music yet, but maybe, you know, just because I...
For me, I like buying the CD. Yeah, I buy a record when I can, when it's available, and then I'll buy a CD. I always like having the tangible product.
Yeah.
I like having it autographed and things as, and all that. But I might also, you know, rip on, like, that's what I like about with the vinyl now, that they all come with like these download cards where you can have download the files off their websites, and you can have the digital copy to put on your phone or iPod or whatever you want to do with it. And but it's nice to have, like, at least like have a mobile version of the music too without having to, you know, buy just the iTunes or whatever it is.
I'll say it's a consumer's world, Shane. If 5% of the people that buy music at all were like you and went out and made a big deal. Like, there's you're not gaining anything for yourself necessarily at promoting all these bands. You just love them, and people see and they're like, you know, Shane's not getting written a check every time he shouts a band's name out. He's going around and he's saying, I love this band. I want them to succeed. I care about this. It's a really selfless thing. If people were more like that, then they could have more right to make demands about what they hear on mainstream radio. Like, I know so many people that are like, oh, 107.7 sucks. It's just the same old. Why is that? Yeah. You think people don't want to make money? Supply and demand. If enough people buy, this is why country's making a huge, it's where the money's at. It's people still buy country music. Fans of country still go out and buy CDs. They're not, you know, people in rural areas just, you know, haven't gotten to the point where they only download their music. There's something about a CD.
Yeah.
That's just the style. And in if more people, like, I mean, just a fraction of people in this, in around the world or even in just this country would go to local shows like you do. Really get out there and support, because that's the only way these bands, like we just said, make their money.
Yeah.
You might sell a few CDs, but merchandise and shows are ticket sales. Those pay your bills. And so
I even you know, bigger bands, like it's kind of got to a point, like, you know, they're not, I always kind of joke about it, but that Head PE, when I saw them last, and they talk about it on stage with Jared, he'll jump off and he'll go over and he'll sign whatever you want, take pictures, but he really pushes the shirts. They got all kinds of shirts that are all $20 a piece. But it's got to where he's not even, it's not the music anymore. It's the fact that he's selling t-shirts, you know. So he turns into a t-shirt salesman, you know, and nobody, and it's more of like, you know, people want the selfie with him and all that. And like, but it's not really as much into the, hey, I spent all this time writing these songs, writing these lyrics, you know, putting all this together. People just want, hey, I got a picture with this guy and a, you know, t-shirt.
You absolutely nailed it. Yeah. You hit it on the head. There is what's been created is this attraction towards what's iconic rather than what's artistic, and so we see that. We all it takes is turn on the TV and see what people are really selling. You know, they're selling the artist, not the art. They're selling the drama of the person, not necessarily the music. And honestly, people follow, I'll use Taylor Swift as an example again. She's got great music for her genre. People follow her, though, because of her personhood. She's Taylor Swift. You don't hear this song, that song, so much as her. And so, really, that's where money, that's why music is the way it is now as far as what's mainstream, is because people stopped buying good music and they started buying the artists that they liked, the icons they liked.
Yeah.
So that's what it takes to be successful in this industry, is to be a celebrity status, an icon of some sort, to be a kind of person rather than to make a kind of honest music. And so that's what more people are creating and producing, because they want to make money. So there's a pull away from making good art and towards being a certain kind of artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what Taylor Swift was really got big, I mean, from outside of the music side, it's just because she was dating, was it Taylor Lautner? I mean, all these breakups she'd go through with these celebrity guys, and that's how people, I mean, because she, you know, she got known for, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to, like, the early stuff when she come up as a young teenager doing Tim McGraw and Pictures to Burn or whatever.
I actually prefer that first
one. Well, that's what I mean, there's a lot of us, but yeah, that's compared to what now, the Shake It Off and stuff, like, it's just...
She embraced what was, you know, and I'm not saying she doesn't like making that music, I just, you know, there's been an obvious evolution for her, and it's been a sly, I'm not saying it's not honest for her, because I don't know her, I'm just saying there's been a definite pull towards what makes money.
It's a brand now. I mean,
it is a brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially.
And she's got the fans for it.
Yeah, I mean...
She's not going to sit around a table at her label and have them say, you can make several million more dollars for us if you write like this and not like this and not, you know.
I saw a list, speaking of all the money and stuff, saw a list the other day about all the, you know, top grossing artist of the year. And yeah, they had a lot of country, you know, I saw like Kenny Chesney and Toby Keith and all these guys up there, Jason Aldean, I think, and then Taylor and Lady Gaga and Miley Cyrus, they were all on the list too. But what I thought was interesting was the number one on the list was 6 times more money than the second person. Well, it was like Beyonce was like up there at number two, I think. Mm-hmm. Number one was Dr. Dre, like, which I thought was crazy. Like, he didn't put out any music this year.
But how did they, what, because didn't he have that, I mean, how did, what did they contribute to, just like his whole earnings? Because well, yeah, he had that deal with Apple, didn't he, with the Dre, like
the Beats. The Beats
yeah,
stuff.
That's like, what I think would probably.
That's what's crazy. He hasn't put out music in a long time, and he's that.
He might have producer credit, though.
Yeah, well, you know? Yeah.
Like Timberland does
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, he produced, he's on all of Eminem stuff and stuff. That's all Shady Aftermath stuff, like, so he's got producing credits on all that, and. So obviously,
sure too, yeah,
obviously
sure.
Eminem labels. Made a lot of money this year, so he makes more money for Dre. And but it's just, I thought that was the craziest thing that like he made over $600 million and he hasn't put out a song. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's just,
that's how it works. And,
yeah.
And so the people, conversely, the people who are making fantastic music are making no money. So yeah. I say again, William Fitzsimmons, it's just not a household name.
Sure.
But yeah. I prefer to see that guy show over anybody.
Yeah. Well, I brought up on the show a lot of times like guys like Will Hogue, who I'm a huge fan of, and but that's my taste. I love singer songwriter stuff like William.
Exactly. I was huge. I was really happy to see his big break with Ford.
Yeah. Yeah, you see these guys, it's fun to watch them and then what I love about that too is like I can go to their show and I can get to and sit and hang out with somebody. You know, I can go and I can shake his hand after the show and said, you know, that was a hell of a show. You know, there's very, very limited opportunity to be able to go meet Taylor Swift. And you know,
or have her care that she met you. Like,
yeah.
You know, you really start to appreciate your fans when they're all you have.
Sure.
Like Will Hogue, I bet, you know, he remembers you. He you know, he's like, you know, that's my fan. That's Shane. Mm-hmm. He likes my music. It means something to him. Taylor Swift, I'm sorry we keep beating up on her using her as an example, but she's just that famous.
She's arguably the biggest thing right now. I mean, you know, she sells out arenas all over the world, and you know, she's doing it on a level that not many people are. And
oh yeah, she's
So she's kind of the face of what pop music is right now.
And, yeah,
it's all right.
And there's a tier, there's a tier underneath her that I'm still talking about. You know, you know,
no, for sure.
That's not A level celebrity, but still, you know, not in your magazines in the aisles at Schnucks, but still very popular and making sufficient amount of money, selling out big stadiums. But my aspirations have nothing to do with that realm anymore. And I don't think that I write the type of music that anyone would want to buy like that. You know.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be realistic, too. I mean, it's just like any other, those people who make the tons, like, just insanely amount of money is just so, like, it's just such a minuscule percent of people that saying, I mean, you can definitely reach for it, but you have to be realistic, and you have to understand, you know, I got to make a living, and if I'm going to say, well, I'll probably sell out arenas, whatever, I mean, it's just, you're almost setting yourself up to fail, not to say it can't happen,
exactly.
But you're, you got to be realistic, and you're going to be more productive, I think, if you have realistic goals than to say, I mean, if that seems like whenever that something like that happens, it didn't start out that way. I don't think a lot of people who get to that point are like, well, I'm going to aspire to be this and have these deals and stuff. It happens once they get established. But
right, and you'll end up, as a songwriter, you'll end up writing for relevance sake,
yeah,
for what will get you paid, rather than writing honestly necessarily.
Yeah.
Which is always a my opinion, a huge blow to the music.
Yeah. Oh, I guess, you know, more power to however they make their money, whatever they want to do, I guess. But yeah, I think it's if you can live with yourself at the end of the day and how you're doing things, if that's the important thing. And if it means making tons of money and you kind of compromise your creative, you know, whatever, then so be it. But I think it's always more honorable when you can go and write your own stuff and say, I...
Plus, it garners you those quality fans I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, if you write for relevance sake, you may clinch the quantity fans, but only for a moment.
Yeah, it's viral.
They'll come with the moment, but they'll go with the moment.
Yeah.
But there are some bands, that are timeless in a way, because they haven't changed, they've just stayed honest and true, that they'll have their quality fans for decades to come.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they, you know, that meant something for them. I'm that way with Third Eye Blind.
That's exactly who I was thinking about. I always had Third Eye Blind.
Has been around since I was a child. And every time they come out with a new record every 5 years or so, they haven't changed. They're still Third Eye Blind. Stephen Jenkins is still Stephen Jenkins. He's still writing like Stephen Jenkins.
Yeah.
You know, he'll never make a Out of the Vein album again, you know, Jumper, Jump Kind of Life, How's It Gonna Be, all those songs. He'll never do that again.
Right.
But he's still making Third Eye Blind
music. If you hear something, you know it's Third Eye Blind. Yeah. It's not like...
Yeah. I've been to his concert several times, and it's just, you know why? Because I love that it's still Third Eye Blind. It's endearing is what it is. Conversely, you know... my other favorite artist, Brooke Fraser, for example, she just totally changed her style up, and it's not bad at all. It's just different from what I'm used to and what I really liked and what worked for her. And as a result, I think I might pass on seeing her show when it comes around. It's not what I like.
I
saw Third Eye Blind maybe a year ago now. Pretty soon after they opened Ballpark Village, might have even been like the first night.
I was there with you. I remember that.
Like that was, that might have been actually like the first show they had there or something like that.
Yeah, it was. It was opening night. Yeah. I remember running into you there. I was with a friend of mine. I was like, Shane.
Yeah, that was pretty cool though. Like that place packed up, man, and then the band sounded good. And I went to like 3 shows that day.
I'm not even surprised.
I went to Blue City Deli at like 6 o'clock, 6 to 8, I saw Nikki Hill and Matt Hill there. And then I drove to the ballpark and I watched Third Eye Blind. And then when they were wrapping up, I went to stopped in St. Charles and I watched Devin Allman play at place in St. Charles, Redfish, Bluefish. So, yeah, I stopped by, caught 3 shows. That's one of my best days.
that was my top days. Jeez.
It's a good day.
It's hard to get them, like, where you can get an early show and one that goes late, too, you know, to where you can kind of work it all out. That was fun, though, man. Like I said, Third Eye Blind, those guys have been around forever, but they still doing it.
They still have their fans they initially had, too. They clinched the quality fans, and even some quantity fans that they had from the old days. But
and I think it helps. Like there's guys like I bring up Tom Petty every now and then. Guys like that where they've been doing it forever, but they know what people want to hear, and like they don't. He might sprinkle in a couple of new ones, but he plays the hits. And I think Third Eye Blind, they played all hits that night, and like they played everything you know you wanted to hear.
I enjoyed, was it Ursa Major? Is that what the most recent one was? I enjoyed that. Because I think they're supposed to be doing Ursa Minor from what... And that was, I mean, like I said, every like 5 years or more, whatever it is. But I enjoyed that. Love Bonfire, dude. That song's so good.
Yeah.
So good. But yeah, just Third Eye Blind is one of those bands you can hear and you know it's them, but you're just like, there's a certain feel or tone to their music that you're just like, hell yeah.
Stephen Jenkins is one of the most... honest songwriters I think ever are seen, and that's really what makes good music, I think, is honesty.
Is that what you say in that because I hear it, but like you say, is that a Stephen, you said something about like
a Stephen Jenkins track? Almost no one picks up on that. At the end of my single from the record I Know You, as the song is kind of fading out, I'm doing this kind of rap sing thing, and I say, what do I say,
you say something like, it's like a Stephen Jenkins track, and I'm surprised you noted that, or I'm glad you noticed that, or something like that.
Something about listening to a whole new batch of Stephen Jenkins track. Blast a whole new batch of Stephen Jenkins tracks. And I was writing a song about a girl, an old friend of mine named Lauren Bellinger, and how she, you know, we used to be really close, and, you know, I used to date her, and she changed, she started being this party girl, and so I wrote the song about her, and basically the end of it's, you know, she loved Third Eye Blind as much as I did, and I said, the line in the song is, blast a whole new batch of Stephen Jenkins tracks, and you're laughing because I noticed that and didn't even have to ask. And then there it is. Almost nobody picks up. Who's Stephen Jenkins?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it was, I don't know, it's, I throw stuff like that in there. There's stuff like that that only a few people will get in songs that I know more than a few people will hear.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's reckless, but it's honest. I like
it. It works. It's all good. Jeez. Well, I mean, you have anything I'll say? Yeah. This is a blast. Like, appreciate it. I love picking your brain on kind of like the engineering stuff and what you thought of. But yeah, so the album's Arrivals and Departures. Do you have like a website or just Facebook? Best place to kind of reach out?
Facebook right now is my artist place. We could have talked for a while about, you know, how the promotion process went once I had the album, but it really it requires a lot of funding. Mm-hmm. If you're not signed to a label, there is what I'll call the obscurity line, which is selling 10,000 units records. To break through all the noise of so many people can pour into music now. It's so easy to record, like look at what we're doing right now. For anyone to record something and upload it onto the internet, type in Reverb Nation. Now that they're an artist, there is like probably millions of artists out there that's just noise. No matter how good you are, you've got to break through that and get heard first before you're going to be established. No one knows who I am. No one knows what Arrivals Departures is. I'm still confident that if they did, it would have had some traction.
Yeah.
The people that did hear lead me to believe that. But there's no way to break through that obscurity line.
Mm.
Without funding,
right.
And I ran out of money. I hit a wall. I was promoting it as best I could for a while, and then I ran out of cash. And so my next strategy will have more to do with possibly getting signed to an independent record label than trying to. You know, you can only do so much DIY.
Right.
I can't sell myself. I'm not good at the business side of things. I'm better at the creative side of things.
I feel like you either need. Either need the a lot. I mean, regardless, it's going to cost a lot of money. But either you have a lot of money from a label or somebody that's pumping it to, you know, radio play or however it goes, or you just constantly tour and you're on the road trying to play for a couple people at a time. I mean, you're trying to get your name out there the best you can in a city you don't know, and then like or playing with friends and other stuff. But either way, you're hustling, you're spending all your gas money and your food and lodging and trying to crash on somebody's couch. And you got to hustle that way, and you got no time for a life or a family or anything else. And then, and
it's almost like it's a catch-22. You have to have a name before you can invest in making a name.
Right.
You can't just walk up to any saloon or club or bar and be like, hey, I'm going to headline for you, and it's going to be $5 at the door. Who are you?
Yeah,
right.
You've got to do a lot of stuff for free. You got to pay a lot of money to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You do, and I didn't have it up front. So
the big, and then sometimes you just happen to get lucky to where somebody else that's doing it, you know, like making as a bigger than you are, likes your stuff and says, hey, come up with some shows for me, and then. Hopefully their fans become your fans. That's the goal, like the big break, you know. But like, it's hard to get. It's hard to get those opportunities. There are very few of them, and but yeah, it's a crazy business.
You just make videos on YouTube.
Yeah,
that's what Boyce Avenue, man.
I think a big break will be like if I'm on one of these TV shows, like. One Tree Hill or Scrubs back in the day. I know, like, that's how a lot of people's breakthroughs came.
Scrubs, man, was known for, like, some amazing...
Yeah. Sound. That's how I figured out who the Civil Wars were, was on some TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. Which are no longer together now.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But yeah, man. Well, what was that, you did that video with, like, Lindsay and Jamie and...
When I first came back 2 years ago, I went and visited some close friends of mine that I'd grown up with.
That was pretty cool.
And it was just some friends I had from choir when I was in high school. And we got together and we were just like, let's do a mashup, you know. There's this pop chord progression, which is like on any given scale degree, the 1, 4, 5, 6 chord progression. We just picked a bunch of random pop songs and mashed them all. and we recorded on YouTube, and I played the violin, even though it was like the first day I'd had it. it was fun. It was interesting.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. Like you mentioned, Boyce Avenue, and there's like the Walk Off the Earth, like even like Pentatonics. They do a ton of YouTube video stuff, and like, I mean, there's money in that too. Like if you can, you can get royalty or monetize
the videos. I read yesterday that the top 10 YouTube artists make more than
I saw that. Who was it? Who was the guy who was just on South Park? I can't think what his name was, but yeah, dude makes like $6 million or something. Yeah, but like, yeah, they make over, you know, multiple millions of dollars a year. Mm-hmm. You know, Smosh and these different guys, and it's just, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there's definitely money that can be made there, and if you can get a following, absolutely. Sure. You know,
and that's the same thing. It's the same hustling that it would take to tour and things, but it's more in a digital way to where you kind of got to keep putting your stuff where in the right place to for the people to sit, and then hopefully then they would keep clicking share and
so on. Well, if it goes viral, you know, you can really luck out, but it's just like the same thing. You got to see through all the crap that's out there and hope that something sticks or, you know, somebody finds it. But, entertainment's an interesting, and, you know, we all know different, you know, aspects that just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, appreciate you coming on and hanging out, dude.
It's good talk.
Good times. And, again, Arrivals and Departures, you can find it basically any musical type of...
Type in David Butler, Arrivals and Departures. There's actually, there's a few other David Butlers that I seem to have been looped in with. I'm usually the first one. The picture of me at the Austin airport and rented out that morning.
Yeah.
But there's a few other, like I said, anybody, Joe Schmo can be on there. There's a few other David Butlers that seem to be, like, along with my name, but...
Yeah. And we'll find the 1157 tracks. And I'll talk to my brother, Mick. So you still got those? He's like, oh, yeah. They're probably on my iPod or iPhone or something. Just because he keeps all that stuff. But,
I think we talked to Clockwork a while back, and they had a funny story about, there was a DJ named Clockwork.
Yeah.
And like, he was on some big festival, whatever it was, like... I don't know, whatever it was, but everybody saw like Clockwork on there and like, oh my God, you guys are playing that? And they're like, no, it's not us. Like,
Clockwork.
Yeah. So, but yeah, there's a lot of confusion when you have, obviously that's their band name, but you can't, I mean, unless you come up with some kind of stage name or something, but
yeah,
I mean, that's your given name. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But,
that's all right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, pick up the album, and also make sure you mention Clockwork. Tweet at us on our Twitter, and we'll throw you out a free CD.
Hashtag Clockwork. First person, too. We don't have multiple CDs, so like if 18 people do it, whoever the first person is, get it. So it'll be sweet. It's a good record. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, subscribe, and leave us mean comments of how big my nose is in a blonde wig from that YouTube video. Sweet. So, David Butler, man, thanks for coming on. It's good catching up with you.
Thanks, guys.
And, you know, if we're ever in gym class again, we'll try and find that third wheel that was part of that group. I'm going to find out who his name was, and I'll shoot you a message. I saw him at Stephanie's a while back. I just can't think of his name. But
you're dropping all kinds of local schnooks and
stuff. I know. I'm trying to get sponsored by somebody. Plug. I just can't believe Slacker CDs and Games was there. So, episode 36, David Butler. Man, thanks for coming on. It's a blast.
Thanks, David. Well, this ain't got nothing to do with your smile. I don't care if you wear your hair down. This ain't got nothing to do with the eyes in the room following you around. What happened to the you I knew a few years ago? With the innocent hope and a heart of gold. Hated everything about those clothes and based the life off movie clothes. Can I say something that's been weighing on my mind? Let me tell you one thing. I'm sure you don't hear all the time. You might fool everyone else, even lie to yourself. But I know you. I know you. So go be who you came to be. I'm not buying a thing, 'cause I know you. I know you. It does nothing.
on a show. A dime a dozen, they come and they go. You might as well drop the act. My memory's better than that. I'm not one of your new friends here that don't know. What happened to the you I knew a few years ago? With the innocent hope and a heart of gold. Hated everything about those clothes and based a life off movie quotes. Can I say something that's been weighing on my mind? Let me tell you one thing. I'm sure you don't hear all the time. You might fool everyone else. See, they're lying to yourself. But I know you. I know you. So go be who you came to be. I'm not buying a thing. Cause I know you. I know you. What business does this sentimental lyric lover have in a place where we can barely hear each other? Music never loses who it chooses to match. Yeah, people change, but not like that. Can I say something that's been weighing on my mind? And I'm damn sure you don't hear all the time. You might fool everyone else. Truly, if you lie to yourself, but I know. Can we just get out of here? I wanna just get out of here. Da, 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 da. Got to do better than that to get the feeling back. Heart attack, blast a whole new band to Stephen Jenkins tracks. And you laughing cause I noticed that I never even had to ask. Because I know you, baby. It's gonna take more than that to shake me. It's gonna take more than you not to fake me. So get up.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.